Okay, we are recording.
Okay. I am calling to order the February 5th special meeting of the Arizona Board of Occupational Therapy Examiners at 1:32. Roll call is next.
So shall I do that? Do you want me to do that?
Sure. Okay. Do you want me to do it? Would you do it?
Okay. Barbara Paulson?
Here. Present.
Charlene Marbs?
Present.
Quentin McAllister?
Present.
And then as far as board staff, Karen Whiteford? Present. And Vicki Igarola?
Present.
And from the Attorney General's office, we have Scott Donald?
Present.
Okay. Item three, are there any declarations of conflict of interest today? If no one replies, I will assume that we have no conflicts of interest. And we don't. Okay. Item number four, we are considering the licensure application of Paul Vallarta. I did just kind of put together a brief synopsis because this has occurred over multiple months, and I thought it might be helpful. Actually, I thought we would have new board members here. So would you be okay if we just do a little refresher of where we're at?
Oh, sure.
Okay. So, Mr. Vallarta applied for his occupational therapy assistant license on August 25th. He submitted three documents relating to his criminal history and disciplinary actions with his application. The board staff then emailed him a deficiency letter on September 11th asking for any and all documents related to his arrest, criminal conviction, or disciplinary action that he disclosed on his application. Mr. Vallarta then complied with the request and responded with four additional documents. After reviewing the application and the submissions at the November 13th board meeting, the board felt that Mr. Vallarta had not provided sufficient documentation regarding his criminal history and requested that he provide additional documentation. It was noted that Mr. Vallarta's fingerprints had still not been processed. Mr. Vallarta did email additional documents to the board on November 18th, and he also submitted his fingerprints after the November meeting. At the December 10th meeting, Mr. Vallarta was in attendance and provided clarification and greater details concerning his substantial criminal history from 1993 to 2010, which included multiple convictions of DUI as well as two convictions of misdemeanor battery. When asked by a board member if he had any incidents with the law since 2010, Mr. Vallarta replied that he has had none. Mr. Vallarta shared that he had been working in Utah from 2014 to April of 2020 and was laid off due to the COVID-19 virus. While he is currently living in California, Mr. Vallarta has applied for licensure in Arizona as he does have an offer of employment here. Board staff did report that his criminal background check had not yet been processed. The Central Service Bureau must transfer funds to DPS before that process can occur, and there is a backlog. Considering Mr. Vallarta was not forthcoming in providing all documents related to his previous criminal and disciplinary actions, with his initial submission of license application, The board felt strongly that it would like to see its criminal background check results before making a decision to grant or deny his license. Mr. Vallarta attended the January 8th meeting. At this time, the board staff reported that they were still unable to submit fingerprints to DPS. So in accordance with Arizona Administrative Code R4-43205A9 and B6, the board must approve or deny Mr. Vallarta's initial application for licensure by February 8th. So because our next regularly scheduled board meeting is February 12th, we're here at this special meeting today. Does any board member have any, this was just from my notes, so any corrections, clarifications?
No, thank you for that. I think that was very thorough. Appreciate the summary as well.
I as well.
Okay. So, we have our task set forth today. I am considering making a motion to go into executive session for some legal advice.
Before we do that, Madam Chair, I think there was a note that the executive director was waiting on one last piece of additional information. Is that correct, Ms. Whiteford?
I was, and I have since sent that by email to the board members.
That was the additional. Okay, thank you. Okay, I'm ready now, Madam Chair.
Okay, I would like to put forth a motion that we move into executive session for legal advice. Do I have a second?
Charlene Marv second your motion.
All in favor, roll call please.
Barbara Paulson?
Yay.
Charlene Marbs?
Aye.
Quentin McAllister?
Aye.
Okay, so Mr. Vallarta, you've been through this before. I'm going to put you in the lobby while the board discusses or gets legal advice, and then when we go back into regular session, I'll bring you back into the meeting.
Yes.
Okay.
Madam Chair, what is the time of going into executive session? We need Ms. Whiteford.
It's 1:40 p.m.
Okay.
Sorry about this. I'm new at this.
Oh, that's okay. I wasn't sure if we needed it. Thank you.
Thank you for the reminder.
Okay, so let me turn off the recorder. Okay, we are recording.
We are back in open session at 2:20. Okay.
Mr. Vallarta, since we last met, there's been information provided about an arrest you had in May 1997. Would you provide us more details about that and why it was not part of your application?
For the arrest in 1997, I had to send Ms. Whiteford some information, and that was one of the things that I did send to her as far as my application goes. And I called her, followed up, make sure that she received it, and she told me she did, and she's going to put it in my application.
Yes, she did, and thank you for sending it. My question is, in the original, when you originally completed your application, and you were asked to provide, you know, all of the information pertaining to any criminal activity, this was not provided. You did not mention it or provide the information. And when we asked you previously to, you know, give us additional documentation, this was not part of that documentation as well. So if you could give us some details about it at this time, we'd appreciate it.
Yes, it was my mistake that I didn't send it originally with the other information that I had sent to Ms. Whiteford when I was asked to. It was my mistake, and I did send it to her, but I wasn't trying to hold anything back from this application because I have been trying to, you know, get this license for quite some time, and I know because of the COVID, it hasn't been helping any, and it made me, I had to go to the court and get some, a couple of files from the court, and the things have changed, and I think that's one of the reasons that I didn't get all the information at one time, because now when you have to, when you go to the courthouse, you have to set up an appointment, and you ask them for, like, a copy of your case, and then if you don't get all of them, then you have to set up another appointment. I guess I made a mistake in not including this one with the other information.
I may be a little bit confused. Ms. Marbs, what was your original question?
My question to him was, why was it not provided initially when he answered the question about, you know, any and all criminal activity, and when we asked him previously a few months ago to provide additional information, he did not provide it at that time. And what could he tell us about that arrest? So it was a long question.
Okay. I thought that was specifically related to the Nevada license revocation.
No, I was referencing the 1997 arrest.
Okay.
Did I answer your question?
Are there any other details you'd like to share with us about that arrest?
No, I know that I received counseling for that incident, for that arrest, and it was been destroyed or expunged.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
A question for you, Ms. Whiteford.
Yes.
Has the Mr. Bayard's criminal background check results come back yet?
Yes, they have. And that's how I found out about the 1997 incident. So as soon as I found out about that, I contacted Mr. Vallarta to get more information. And he came back within hours with the document. And, you know, I would like to note that it does say on that document that I recently provided regarding the 1997 incident that the case file was destroyed. And it was dismissed in furtherance of, what was it? Furtherance of, gosh, I have to remember what it was.
It was in furtherance of justice.
Thank you. And it did state that he attended counseling. And when I asked Mr. Bayard why he didn't report it, he said it was, you know, it was so long ago and it had been dismissed.
So in the latest criminal background check, then there have been there's no evidence of criminal activity since 2010?
That's
correct.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, I'd just like to recap a couple of things that was provided to us in a summary as we consider Mr. Bayard's license. So he did not provide copies as required of the stipulated settlement and disciplinary order or the denial of extension of probationary period letter. which indicated that his license would be revoked. But he did provide the letter from 2019 stating that he had an application for a Nevada license approved. He provided a copy of the license denial letter dated February 21st, 2020, from California, but did not give us a copy of the denial letter from 2013. And then he did not disclose the 1997 arrest, but it came forward because of the criminal background check, and when asked, he did provide the letter. Ms. Whiteford, have I missed anything from your summary?
Let's see. As far as information that wasn't provided,
yes,
right away. No, I believe you summarized it well.
Okay. And just one more thing to mention, that you mentioned in a summary test that the staff had mailed a letter of deficiency to Mr. Vallarta back in September asking for any and all documents related to your arrest, criminal convictions, or disciplinary actions disclosed on your application. And only part of that information was provided to us at that time by Mr. Vallarta. Madam Chair, I have no other questions or comments.
Okay. It appears that, well, it doesn't appear. It's a fact that Mr. Vallarta did not fully disclose everything along the way. I think we all agree on that. And I'm just wondering if that rises to the level of a denial of a license, or if we should look at what's been going on in the last 10 years where there has been no criminal activity verified. I would just be interested in the insights of my fellow board members.
I'm definitely conflicted on the matter too, considering the significant history that's aged, but then the omission and absence of multiple pieces of information that are very new, including the California denial and then the revocation from Nevada. Those are very telling, in my opinion, on those stances in those particular jurisdictions of the belief to have or to not have a license. And I do value that, even though we don't have the same regulations, it's still part of our occupational therapy code of ethics and moral fiber as an occupational therapist. So that definitely weighs heavy on me in the consideration of this particular case.
Thank you for that.
I feel conflicted as well, in agreeing with Dr. McAllister. The criminal activity itself has aged, and I can appreciate that. I am struggling with the consistent or multiple omissions of information. The questions seem very clear, and so that's what causes my, I guess, my sense of internal conflict on this matter. Happening once, okay, but multiple times, that bothers me quite a bit. when there were multiple requests to disclose any and all information.
Especially having been through the process with multiple states and understanding somewhat how the process works and the information collection, etc.
Mr. Vallarta, would you like to comment on this and weigh in on what we're struggling with on your past patterns of behavior in reporting information that was necessary to apply for a licensure?
I would like to say that I know that working in this field, it's not a right but a privilege, and I've worked in Utah for close to 6 years and never had an incident. And my past history, I know it doesn't help me any, but it's like, again, it's been a long time since I had an encounter with the law. And as far as trying to leave out information, there's no way that I would want to leave out information. I know that this is not an easy process to gather all the information, and especially in these times. So I tried my best to get all the documentation to Ms. Whiteford. I'm not trying to conceal or hold anything or any information from you guys, because this is important to me. And I hope I could get a license with Arizona, because I would really want to work in Arizona.
Mr. Vallarta, do you still have an active license with Utah?
Yes, sir.
What about considering an option of granting this license through a consent agreement? Would there be substance to a consent agreement that would alleviate, our concerns as we wrestle with this? I would be interested in hearing if anybody has any thoughts on that.
I'd like to go into executive session for legal advice. I'd like to make a motion to go into executive session for legal advice.
I will second that motion. So we will adjourn.
All in favor?
Oh, all in favor.
Barbara Paulson?
Aye.
Charlene Marks?
Aye.
Quentin McAllister?
Aye.
Motion passes. We will go into executive session at 2:35 p.m.
Okay, Mr. Vallarta is back in the room. And the time.
And we are back in. We are back in regular session at 2:36 p.m. Where we left off was trying to get some feeling about an option of granting Mr. Vallarta a license through a consent agreement. If that would be something viable or not.
I'm probably leaning more towards not. based on the current information and the statutes in place.
Ms. Paulson, what are some stipulations or items you would be interested in putting into a consent agreement?
Well, that is the question, Ms. Marbs.
Oh.
Maybe a probationary period or some supervision. I'm not sure. I don't think CEUs would be applicable.
This is a license for an occupational therapist, not a COTA, correct?
No.
I cannot
he is a COTA.
A COTA, okay.
Yes.
So CODAs are subject to supervision restrictions anyways.
Mm-hmm. So are you saying that's kind of a moot point? Or?
Not necessarily. It would be possible maybe to craft in the consent agreement that he has to maintain supervision as that of a first-year therapist, which is different than after the first year, as the contacts and the supervision rules are quite different.
Are those rules outlined somewhere specific?
In my head. So they have to be within direct contact supervision every 14 days, I believe is how. Is it 14 days or is it?
Oh, let's see. So you're looking for the most stringent?
Yeah. I mean, I know that's on the first year, and I'm pretty sure it's contact with supervisor every 14 days, direct face to face.
Let's see.
A limited permit's even more strict. There has to be an OT on site during any treatments.
Yeah, he cannot get a limited permit because he's already passed the NBCOT exam.
Right. But could we put something similar to that in a consent agreement?
And I do have a question while we're considering those about the supervision. My conflict doesn't come with concerning the inability of him doing his job. And I know what you're specifying is about the supervision of him performing his duties.
Is it more of like a potential risk for fraud and Medicare or Medicaid abuse?
Or not understanding instructions? Provided if there was some misunderstanding about questions, that's part of my conflict as well. Based on Mr. Viarta's response to our questions, that he didn't understand the question or there were mistakes made.
And the questions weren't asked to get clarification?
Yes, that's a thought too. I don't know that supervision would remedy, I'm not saying that it won't. I don't know that supervision would remedy my concerns.
Okay.
I do think, we're kind of going down that direction of his state of mind, which seems a little vague, and how do you discern that? I have concerns about that.
I would agree. That it wouldn't be the board's place, I don't believe, to establish, and this is an assumption, mental competency. And that would have been addressed and established in, through taking the academic courses and going through and passing the exam. So
I agree with you, Dr. McAllister.
What was Ms. Marbs, was I understanding that correctly, or did I take a left turn?
No, not a left turn. I wasn't necessarily trying to assess his competency. I was just saying my conflict, based on what I stated previously, I don't know that stringent supervision of him would really ease my conflicts, per se. And maybe it took a left turn when I wondered about, understanding orders and questions and all of that, if these questions caused an issue. So I could have taken the left turn.
So, Ms. Marbs, am I understanding you right that it's not really has to do with his job performance or on-the-job performance that is concerning?
Right. My biggest concern, just to be clear, my biggest concern is the repeated omission of information when asked for him to provide it. And I don't believe supervision alleviates my concern, if that helps.
No, I appreciate.
Is that from a moral and ethical standpoint?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So I concur with that. That's where my reservations lie as well.
Well, I don't disagree that Mr. Vallarta has a pattern of behavior when it comes to applying for a license that, he is not good. He was not forthcoming. But does that rise to the level of a denial of his license? I'm not sure.
I'm sorry. I would like to pose a question to both of you guys in relation to, would you be comfortable with Mr. Vallarta coming into your home and treating your child with autism or your very ill mother who just had some kind of surgery? Those are the kind of, where would you guys lie on those particular situations? Would you be comfortable having Mr. Vallarta in your home treating said family member?
I'm not sure why you're asking that question.
My moral and ethical reservation. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Trustworthiness, is that it?
I mean, that's really open for your interpretation. My reservations, that's the way I've always looked at these tougher cases from a standpoint of would I be comfortable with this person working with my child who has autism or cognitive delays or any kind of handicap, whether it be an intellectual disability or physical, or my great grandmother who just had a hip replacement and she's on pain meds and she's not always coherent because maybe she has dementia, things like that. It's like, you can take that scenario however you want, but is that something you'd be comfortable with?
Dr. McAllister, I'm sorry to interrupt, and Madam Chair, I hope you don't mind if I ask a question. When Ms. Marbs and Ms. Paulson contemplate this question, are they reflecting on Mr. Vallarta's deficient way of completing the application, or are they considering his criminal history?
The picture as a whole.
board should keep in mind that they are really principally going to be considering the application deficiencies, I believe, with regards to this. The board is going to have to. It may be helpful at this point for the board to have discussion if there were an actual motion on the table. So perhaps it may be helpful if a board member feels that there's a motion that they would like to make, and then there could be discussion regarding that specific potential motion. And then if it fails, then the board could attempt another motion. But it may be helpful at this point for a board member to put forth a motion for discussion by the board.
Okay, I'll make a motion to deny the license based on ARS 32-3423. And that would be of moral turpitude. And then secondary, and I might have this wrong, but 323401S, and that's in relation to the application process. So, do I have a second to the motion?
This is Charlene Marks. I second it.
Oh, I'm sorry, Barbara. I apologize. it's a habit. I tried to keep my mouth shut.
So we have a second. Roll call. All in favor?
Barbara Paulson.
Nay.
Charlene Marks.
Aye.
Quentin McAllister.
Aye.
All right, the motion passes 2-1 to deny Mr. Vallarta's application for licensure in the state of Arizona. Mr. Vallarta, do you have any questions or comments?
I know that I didn't complete my application. And I think that helped. That kind of hindered me getting a license. And the other thing is, in Utah, I've been, when I was working there for like 6 years, I worked with people in the skilled nursing facility and doing home health, and I never had an incident. I worked with people with hip replacements, autism. TBI patients, stroke patients, and I never had an incident. And I respect the board's decision, and all I can do is maybe wait and continue. Maybe in the future, apply again. Maybe the board will have a change of heart and maybe grant me one day. And I thank you guys for giving me the time to hear me out and taking the time from you guys. I know you guys have important things to do also. Just wanted to say thank you.
Mr. Vallarta, we really thank you for coming to our meetings for the last several months and telling your story. And I applaud your persistence, and I hope that you do find employment, if not in Arizona, in another state really soon.
Yes, thank you, ma'am.
You're welcome.
Yes, have a good day.
Take care.
Thank you.
Okay, Madam Chair, then we will move on to item number 5, please.
Yes. Just had to find my agenda, and I'll put it here. on to item 5, agenda items for our next meeting. None?
I don't have anything, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Thank you.
On to number 6, call to the public. And I don't believe...
Yeah, Mr. Merritt is the only one we have on the call.
Right, right. So on that note, I will make a motion to adjourn at, I keep losing my clock here, 2:52 p.m. All in favor?
Do we need a second?
Actually, this board, I believe this board doesn't do a motion to adjourn.
Oh, okay. Oh, the one time I remembered. All right. Thanks,
y'all have
everybody.
A good weekend.
Thank you.
Y'all take care. Bye. Hey, have a super weekend.